耳。
Hello, 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 and welcome to the local edition. On this Friday evening, I'm your host, Patricio Roballo. Thank you so much for joining me on the program for this evening. Hope you're doing well. We have a packed show for you tonight, so let's get straight to it. In the second half of the show, we'll learn more about the Hudson Public Authority. We'll find out what that is all about and what effect it has on the electrical grid. But first, it's Friday on the local edition. And we have on the phone with us now the one and only Chris Rowley from the Schwanker Journal, letting us know what's happening in Ellenville and Ulster County. Chris, welcome back to the show. The first story you have is a story about an unfortunate trash that's near one of the popular tourist sites in Ellenville and Ulster County, the Overlook on Route 52. What can you tell us about this?
When you're driving over on Route 52, into the Rondout Valley above Ellenville. That's a beautiful place. The view of the valley is just gorgeous. It's as good as any view anywhere. And there are a number of little pull-offs along the side of Route 52 where you can pull off if you want, park and do anything, and picnic if you like. Unfortunately, people who do picnic seem to like to throw their beverage containers and whatever else just over the rail onto the side of the road or into the vegetation below. It's very strange that people would do that, but that's clearly what happens considering the amount of debris that is regularly scooped off of that area and taken away by either the county or once a year by the DOT, which has a program for doing this all over the state. And I don't understand, I just don't get it, why people are like this. Well, I know they are. I know it's just as terrible in England. It's just terrible. Some roads in England are just disgusting. But here, with our natural beauty and everything, this shouldn't happen. And on top of that, there's another thing that's going on right now, and we're hoping that it will be something can be done about this, which is come Friday evenings and Saturday evenings, a group of young, mostly guys, showing up at that uppermost pull-off area, Overlook, and most of them are coming in pickups, and they're partying. And that involves a lot of trash and a certain amount of dangerous activity because they're leaving a lot of rubber on the road up there. If you drive 52 and you go over the ridge, you will notice it all along that area up there, rubber left on the road. And one has to wonder, if you're doing that and an 18-wheeler or an ambulance or something comes around the corner at high speed, do you really want to be part of that? There's a likely prison sentence involved in getting involved with something like that, or going to hospital, or getting killed. Yeah. It's one of those issues. We are asking the public, if you drive by there of, say, between 9 and 10 on a Friday, and you notice a lot of activity there, hey, call it into the state police. Give them a ring and say, hey, what the hell's going on up here? Because the police, we spoke to them, and we understand pretty well how stretched they are. There's only so many of them, and they got a very large area to cover, and they tend to be a reactive force rather than a proactive. They have to. They don't have enough officers to be able to go and sit everywhere where there are issues. So when you see an issue, you have to call them and see if they can got the time and the personnel to respond. Anyway, so that's that there. But then there's another side to this, which is if you go there and you get out and you're taking pictures like I was the other day along the side of the road there, and you're just cataloging the debris, and then you look down further through the tangle of brush along the side of the hill, and you see all kinds of stuff down there, and like mattresses, tires, box frames, TV. It's insane. But so let's just think this through. You drive out from wherever it is you live, and you've got a mattress and a TV or whatever that you want to get rid of. And so rather than go to the transfer station or the dump or whatever you want to call it, so rather than do that and spend a little bit of money, you drive to this overlook in a natural, pristine beauty spot with a fantastic view, the gateway to the Rondout Valley, and then you go to the trouble of dragging the mattress out and throwing it over the edge. Yeah?
Yeah, it makes no sense. I'm on the Dishwankuk Journal's website right now, and I'm looking at your article with a picture there. I could not believe the amount of trash is there. Now, my first question is to you. You're asking residents to call it in when you see activity there that's not conducive to the area. But what about the trash that's there now? Is the county or the town going to do anything about cleaning it up? That's there. What's there now?
Hey, here's the thing. Okay, twice this week, I tried to access that point. Feeling a little bit like General Grant below Vicksburg. It's not easy to access it. I went in on the trail that runs out from the pull-off in the beginning of the Shongum Ridge Trail and Shongum, the sort of park area there. There is a trail there, but you can't get close enough to that particular spot. There's a deep ravine or what do you call it, draw, whatever you call it, down, and the trail doesn't go down into that. So you'd have to bushwhack through that. It is a bit ticky as well. Not bad. It's going to discourage hikers. And so that's not the way to go. The other way is to go onto the old plank road, which runs up supposedly below that, but basically peters out about a quarter of a mile before. And after that, it's brush and holes in the ground. I don't think anyone's going to get there anytime soon. It would require bushwhacking, a degree of rehabilitation, maybe of the old plank road. None of that's cheap. And who would do it? The town? Honestly, Tony Pays and his crew have got so many other things to do, and I doubt they're going to get to it. But maybe in the future, the next highway soup will take that on. Of course, they've got lots of other issues. Yeah, I'm not sure that will be taken care of. And unfortunately, it's not alone. This happens at other overlooks, like on 4455. There's a brilliant overlook. And for some reason, the same kind of stuff is tossed over there. Have to think there's a curious human failing, a mentality issue here that regards those beautiful places as just the right place to throw the mattress. And I don't know how we reach those people. I don't get it. There's so many better ways of dealing with it.
Yeah.
But yeah, all you can, this is mean. It does. You do have mean thoughts sometimes with this sort of thing. All you can hope for is that whoever does this throws their back out really badly the next time they do it.
I mean, it's a tragic thing because, as I said, it's a great spot, beautiful views there. And you think about the tourists who come to New York and, you know, say, oh, look, we should stop here and then look at this beautiful view. And then you just look down and you see just this really plethora of trash. I'm looking at the photo there and you have like bottles and things that I'm sure have not been there, may have been there for a while.
There's layers of sediment. The DOT and the county, they regularly go along the top part and pull all that stuff off. So it's not as bad as it could be. But if you go down a little bit, our intrepid young reporter, Olivia Seppel, she took her camera and went down a little bit. And it's dangerous, because it's very steep. And she got some pictures down there. They're nightmarish. And I just aimed the camera with a big lens down into that and took pictures of that stuff as well. And it's a bit heartbreaking because that is the gateway for a lot of people. That's the gateway to our area. And as you said, if they're tourists or just people coming up from the city, people have been living in the city. They've been there all winter. They're tired of the 400 square foot of their apartment, blah, blah, blah. And they get a car and they come up and they drive in and maybe they stop to get out and take a look at the view and take some pictures, and then they look down.
Right.
And that's, we want to get that cleaned up. I'm not sure at this point how that can be done. It's a little outside of Ellenville, so it's not really a coffee group. That's the Citizens of Forward Facing Ellenville, a very effective and active little group. It's beyond their remit. So I'm not quite sure how it could be done, but it would be nice to get that cleaned up. But then the final thing on this is to prevent this kind of thing, I'm afraid, I think we're going to have to go to some kind of variant on what in France and in Britain, which is cameras.
Mm.
The little trail cams that are just put everywhere. You don't see police anymore when you drive around on British highways. They don't have to be there much. Instead, you get a ticket in the mail. And if you happen to be a tourist or something, then whoever you rented the car from, they get the ticket in the mail, and then they give it to you with an added 25% on top of that. Yeah, that's the way it goes. And the same in France and probably everywhere else in Europe. They have cameras everywhere. You don't see them. I think, I don't know if they still do this, but the British had a thing going on, British police, where they had fake cameras. It was visibly obvious, but it worked. People saw the fake cameras and they slowed down.
Yeah. Where I used to live in the city, I remember seeing fake cameras. I know in the FDRs for a while, there's one spot by the right before 23rd Street, there's always a police car. And when I used to drive the FDR a lot, I noticed that one day one person that's in the police car was a mannequin. which works, because every time you see that police car, you slow down.
Yeah, absolutely. The game is on and everything. And yes, speeding is dangerous and needs to be stopped, but it's sometimes very hard. You're in a hurry to get to the airport. Yeah. No, but you just make sure you leave early.
Yeah.
Anyway, maybe that is one solution to this trash issue, especially as the small trail cameras have come way down in cost and have become very small. So you could just put up a sign saying the trail cams are on, we will get you. And if people come and do that, they'll catch the license plate, maybe catch the video of them doing it, and then police action can take place. Or maybe it won't even be police. Maybe just be a bill would come from the county or from the township. That may be where we'll go. And yeah, one doesn't like the thought that we're going to be watched all the time, but it's always the case when there's a small minority that messes everything up for everybody else. We've got to stop them tossing their TVs off into the overlook, then we'll have to do that. Anyway, that's what sort of thing is being considered now. It's just what people are thinking about. And we'll see. We'll see what happens. But yeah, cleaning that up is going to be very hard. It's almost inaccessible down the bottom.
Yeah, it almost looks like you need some mountain gear almost to attach and grapple down or something.
Yeah. I thought about that, yeah. But we just put some ropes around the guardrail and lower the stuff down. You could get down there. But then you've got to bring that stuff back up. Yeah.
Yeah.
And accessing, as I said, from below, there is a way if you can extend the usable part of Old Plank Road. And maybe you could get in there. And you could also bring a truck in there to load it up. That may be what will eventually be done to clear up the stuff at the bottom. So anyway, hopefully stuff can be done. But other overlooks are even more difficult to approach. I don't know how you get to the bottom of the ones along 4455. I don't think there's any roads or anything at all down there. It's a constant struggle to try to keep things as beautiful as they are.
And, yeah, which is important. Like I said, it's our area and it's tourism here is big. And we love to give everyone a good taste of where we live and not see the trash there. But it's an unfortunate thing that happens, especially in the winter. After the winter, you notice it's amazing the garbage that's on the side of the road after the snow melts. But there are initiatives with like litter plucks and things like that.
Oh, yeah. In the spring, it's all much more visible. And that, again, is the tragedy of it, that it has to be so visible. It seems, why does it have to be like this? That's always the question. And people do make a serious effort to take this stuff. I guess they go out in the middle of the night and to toss it. It does seem bizarre.
It does. But,
yeah.
All right. And then so next thing you have is a thing called Imagine, which is is this an art program or a project? What exactly is this?
This is an effort in Ulster County to create the first ever comprehensive arts and culture plan for the county, to make an inventory of all the artistic, all sorts of things. On the one hand, the Shadowland Theatre, on another, an art gallery in Kingston, the Woodstock Farm Film Festival. There's a lot of artistic and cultural activities and centres. And the idea was to make an inventory of all of that, so that an overall view would be created, and then going forward, money could be prioritized for various aspects of things, whether it be infrastructure efforts to help or improve on art galleries, or things like what they are talking about in this plan, getting hold of underutilized properties and using them for the arts one way or another. Also develop sort of transportation networks to enable people who don't have cars to get around and get to the Woodstock Film Festival, for instance. That sort of thing is part of what's going on here. It's very ambitious. They've done an awful lot of work. There were a lot of people involved. And they had this presentation the other day, and that was very 21st century because it was viewed by six groups gathered, and they were in-person watch parties at six centers around Ulster County. Now, I went to the one in Ellenville, and that was at the 9 Market Street Gallery. which is a beautiful space. Mr. Valinsky has done a great job there. And it's becoming a very usable space, and other projects are using it too. Anyway, I'm sitting there and it's all by Zoom. So you've got all six people are visible representing the other centers, and so Kingston and New Paltz and so on, and discussing various aspects of it. A presentation from Eva Maurice Ortega and Magda Espinal of Lord Cultural Resources, which was the sort of PR firm that was hired to pull this together, and they did a very good job. And it was it's been a year-long active thing. There was a video launch last summer, and then various other things through the fall and over the winter, and public feedback has been taken, and that's all being sorted through and examined and getting an impression of what the public might be interested in. And now it goes forward, and the plan itself can be viewed if you're an Ulster County person or not. And but you're interested in this, just Google Imagine, all capital letters for Imagine Ulster. That will get you straight to it. There's the full plan can be downloaded in PDF. It's 9 megabytes. There's a nice kind of action deck that they used for the meeting on, Tuesday. So you can do that. And or if you want, there's just an action summary, kind of like a cheat sheet, which is much less of a load. Take a look at that too. Lots of detail, a tremendous amount of work here. And it's worth taking a look at. If you're involved with the arts in any way, take a look here, because there's like a blueprint for what might be effective channeling of resources, whether it's private contributions that are coming in or state money or going out for, you know, grant funding or loans or anything like that. There's all the sort of things that can rely on a plan like this, so that you're not just working in the dark. So say you're a private donor and you've got some money and you really like serious film, and you're sort of thinking, well, it'd be great to have a film festival. Before you do that, take a look at this plan and see what other film festivals already exist. And maybe you could save yourself a lot of effort and grief and just contribute to those. It's that thing, making people aware of what already exists, which can really be a big help. Or say you're a theater troupe and you're looking for a theater to use. If you investigate through this, you might find, oh, there's this place, Ellenville, and they have this marvelous little theater called the Shadowland Theater. And look at this, they have a second stage.
Right.
And you can arrange that stage to be theater in the round if you want. It's very flexible.
Right.
And if you didn't know about it, you could blunder around and never find anything. So if you go here, you can find that kind of resource, and that can help you channel whatever it is you plan to do. And same with art galleries. You know, say you're an artist and you're looking for a gallery, this will be one way to find them. Oh, man, you can do that already on the internet. Rather than do that, you can just go to this plan and find links and key things to resources that can help you. So that was that. There were two things. First of all, it's new and unique for Ulster County. And the other thing that impressed me was the 21st century aspects of it, that we had these meetings and you had this sort of pretty intensive big Zoom with six nodes. Six centers are all talking. Actually, seven, because you've got the Lord people as well. There's that degree of interconnectedness via the internet and using it in the way that dreamers way back when the internet began, the sort of thing that they actually imagined. Yeah.
No, it's great that you said it's a hub of art. And you and I both know that art is sometimes an economic driver for some towns and counties, especially if it's safe for here. We have the Delaware Valley Arts Alliance, which is the arts hub for Sullivan County. And it's has a vibrant community around it in Narrowsburg. These things are economic drivers.
I'm quite sure that particular group, that particular organization, was one of the inspirations for Imagine Ulster. I wouldn't be surprised at all. Yeah, and that this is something that's going to be ongoing. Yeah, and they did throw out some numbers just to show you that the scale of it. They said that there was an $814 million total economic impact from the arts in Ulster County, of which $497 million, by their counting, was in direct impact. That means ticket sales, essentially. That's serious money. After all, our counties up here with 180,000 people or 60,000 people, whatever, you know, we don't count for much in New York,
right.
Not compared to the cities. And it's important for us to get all our ducks in a row, get all things organized to make sure that when we are going out for grants and programs or trying to attract tourists and visitors, that we make it as easy as possible. That's part of it. And yeah, I was impressed by various aspects of this.
All good stuff. So, it's the things that are coming up for Ellenville, and it's good that these things are happening in Ulster County and in Ellenville. So thank you so much for this. I do really appreciate it. We're talking to Chris Rowley from the Schwankum Journal, letting us know what's happening in Ulster County and Ellenville. Again, talk to you again next week, Chris. Thank you so much.
All right. Bye-bye, everyone.
We'll be right back. You're listening to The Local Edition. We'll learn more about the Hudson Public Authority. Stay tuned.
You're listening to The Local Edition, winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
This is Ari Shapiro with NPR. If you've been thinking about helping this station with a contribution, but now is not the right time for a financial gift, you can donate a vehicle you don't need. Pickup is free, and it could be worth hundreds of dollars in support. Think about it, and thanks.
We accept any vehicle, running or not, including cars, trucks, boats, RVs, motorcycles, and more. Donate at wjffradio.org.
Welcome back to The Local Edition. Friday evening, I'm your host, Patricio Roballo. Winter is wrapping up today. Well, yesterday was a really warm and beautiful day. But many energy customers are still left with having to pay high electricity bills from this past season. Some lawmakers argue it's because the companies are privately owned. What would it look like if your local utility company were publicly owned? Introduced by District 103 Assembly Member Shor Rahana and New York Senator Michelle Hengchi, the Hudson Valley Power Authority Act proposes to create a publicly owned corporation that would acquire Central Hudson Gas and Electric Corporation and run it with no profit motive. Central Hudson is currently privately owned by Fortress Inc., a Canadian holding company, and it services the Mid-Hudson Valley area, including Ulster, Sullivan, and Orange counties. Radio Catskill, Kimberly Izar spoke with Assemblymember Shara Khan about how the state bill would look like.
So why don't we start with what this bill would actually do? How would the Hudson Valley Power Authority Act work, and what exactly would it do?
Sure. So, you know, our investor-owned utilities, like Central Hudson, for example, we have seven of them that are legal monopolies, right? They're for-profit corporate monopolies that serve a specific area, their service territory, and the service they're providing is just the distribution of energy. So it's not the supply and generation. It's not even really the transmission. It's just bringing energy from the grid to people's homes, the buildings, and so on. So one of the things that's happening is that the delivery rates are really going up, and there's a reason why that's happening. You know, the basic one being that these utilities are allowed to pass 100% of their operating costs, 100% of their capital costs, and 100% of their financialization costs to their ratepayers. Plus, they are also authorized to earn a certain level of profits based on this factor called the rate of return on equity. And the more they spend on capital projects, which are things that, you know, that you build that last for more than 10 years, the more they can earn profits based on this formula that uses this ROE factor. So all that means is that it is a way to fund the distribution infrastructure in the way that makes least sense for the ratepayer, because it is the most expensive way of doing it. So we want to replace it with a not-for-profit corporation. Public authorities are the model that really became popular during the 1930s, when the country was really trying to figure out how to come out of the Great Depression, how to deal with the post-Second World War era and make like massive infusion of public investments. So this is a model where these entities can act like normal corporations, except they are owned by the public. So in this case, by the state,
Yeah. And this isn't the first time that utility companies are publicly owned. Are there some examples that you can point to help people understand what it could look like?
So if you look at the history of when electricity became available for mass consumption, there was actually not a consensus if it should be privately owned or publicly owned. There was always a debate, right? And what happened was there was really a momentum for public ownership because lots of different areas, like, for example, rural areas in the country, they were not getting electricity as a universal service because it was not profitable enough for the companies to provide that service. Similarly, in all these new urban hotspots that were emerging from when people were moving from rural areas to like dense areas, there was really an inequity in who was getting to use electricity as a basic service. So during that time, what happened was to solve this issue, lots of publicly owned as well as cooperative, municipal owned electric service providers came up. And in fact, in Canada, they went mostly with public power, and across the board in the United States, it was like there was some public power, but the private sector made a deal to let them serve as private companies. And in return, they would allow the state to regulate them. So this is the dominant arrangement that we have, where you have a corporate monopoly, they're private, they're for profit, they're owned by somebody else, but the state is allowed to regulate them. There are publicly owned utilities all over the country in various sizes. The one big one is, you know, the Tennessee Valley Authority that FDR created. In the state of Nebraska, there are zero investor-owned utilities. So they're all either municipal or cooperative. But what we don't have is sort of the model utility for a new era that is not just for one town, that is not just for a strict border, but that is like covering, as you mentioned in the beginning of the program, lots of counties, right? It's like Ulster County, Dutchess County, but also parts of Putnam County, you know? So right. We're trying to create the most innovative and the modern version of it, building on the legacy of publicly owned utilities that already exist. And new data shows that in the last few years, you can see that the rates went up for privately owned utilities much higher than inflation, and for publicly owned utilities much lower than inflation. So even as is, we already have this track record to show that there really is no way of keeping rates low as long as for-profit business is allowed to be involved in this.
Yeah, that's super interesting, kind of that backstory and history. And also what would make the Hudson Valley Power Authority different, and particular for the modern era, I think is really interesting. I'm curious what kind of traction you've seen so far from both customers as well as lawmakers.
There is a lot of interest, and this is one of the reasons we sort of rushed to, you know, finish this bill and introduce it, because in the beginning we were really thinking about it as like, well, this is, you know, going to be our long-term fight priority and so on. But the reason we decided to move forward with the bill, and we were, you know, so excited that Senator Hinchey was enthusiastic about the bill from the beginning, is because we have hit this dead end, really, where people no longer have answers for how to keep these rates low, because people are experiencing an affordability crisis that is hitting them from multiple angles, right? We have huge housing issues. We have supply chain issues that pass on costs to everything that we use. We have, generally speaking, energy issues coming from, you know, geopolitical wars or whatever it is that is driving up inflation and so on. So it is a moment where we feel like the conditions are ripe for people to be interested in why this could be a solution. And that is what we are seeing right now, is that your average ratepayer is very curious about this bill. When we go knock doors, talk to people, people are very eager to learn what this is going to do, which is why the coalition that is supporting this bill, Hudson Valley for Public Power, they've been holding monthly orientations open to the public. People can come, watch the presentation, and ask any questions that they want. So there's a lot of interest. What's at stake is not just the benefits for the customers of Central Hudson, but really for the rest of the state and the country, to have a model that is working and to build on that. Because if you have one successful model, I think it's way more easy to try to replicate that success against other utilities.
That does it for the Local Edition. If you want to hear more of that conversation, visit our website at wjffradio.org. That's it for the Local Edition on a Friday. Lucy, have a good night. Everyone else, stay safe. Talk to you soon.
WJFF Jeffersonville. From river to river, mountain to mountain, we are Radio Catskill.